myself wanting to go to people who have a similar background as myself.
Right.
Because I feel like I understand them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. You know, so
yeah.
that's the only reason why I question.
Yeah. I question it too. It is Acts class. Sorry, turned it on late. It just popped in my head. Oh my gosh. They'll deal with it. Okay, so verses 10 through 21. Then Paul, after the governor had nodded to him to speak, answered, "Inasmuch as I know that you have been for many years a judge of this nation, I do the more cheerfully answer for myself." Now that's a more honest introduction. "Because you may ascertain that it is no more than 12 days since I went up to Jerusalem to worship, and they neither found me in the temple disputing with anyone nor inciting the crowd, either in the synagogues nor in the city. Nor can they prove the things of which they now accuse me. But this I confess to you, that according to the way which they call a sect, so I worship the God of my fathers, believing all the things which are written in the law and in the prophets. I have hope in God, which they themselves also accept, that there will be a resurrection of the dead, both of the just and the unjust. This being so, I myself always strive to have a conscience without offense towards God and men. Now, after many years, I came to bring alms and offerings to my nation, in the midst of which some Jews from Asia found me purified in the temple, neither with a mob nor with tumult. They ought to have been here before you to object if they had anything against me. Or else let those who are here themselves say if they found any wrongdoing in me while I stood before the council. Unless it is for this one statement which I cried out standing among them, concerning the resurrection of the dead, I am being judged by you this day." So Paul states that he would defend himself. He's ready to defend himself. He recognizes that Felix had been a judge of the nation for many years. He doesn't go for all the flowery lies that Tertullus had mentioned, and as I told you, because it wasn't true, Felix was a very cruel man. So Paul reviews the events of his defense, that he had gone to Jerusalem to worship about 12 days prior to this trial, that they did not find Paul disputing with anyone or inciting the crowd, either in the synagogue or in the city. As I said, that he was in the first offense, the first charge against him, that he was a creature of dissension among the Jews throughout the world. So they have no proof for that, for that first charge. And he states that they cannot prove these accusations. They had no evidence. He confesses that he worshiped God according to the way which they call the sect. And this goes to that second offense, that they levied against him, that he's introducing new gods, the sect of the Nazarenes. It's a Greek word, Nazarenes, which is really followers of Jesus, because Jesus was the Nazarene. And he was from Nazareth. And it's interesting that Tertullus didn't say that they're Christians, which by this time was an accepted name for the Christians, because it was first brought up in Antioch more than 20 years earlier than this. And but to use a name Christian would, because Christian says it's the Greek for Messiah, and they denied that Jesus is Messiah, so they avoid that term. So,
who avoided the term?
Tertullus. He avoided the term "these Christians," that he's a leader of the Christians, because that would acknowledge that Jesus was the Christ, the Messiah. So they didn't want to acknowledge Jesus was any kind of Messiah. So they called Paul a leader, a ringleader of the Nazarenes, rather than of the Christians, because it had loaded meaning. Christians had loaded meaning.
To Beth Felix?
Number one, Felix knew about the way, but the term Christian refers to the messiahship of Jesus. And they, and Tertullus didn't want to allude to Jesus being a Messiah of anything.
Because that would give him too much respect, maybe?
Too much.
Okay.
Yeah, they completely denied Jesus was a Messiah of anything. So, you know, especially when they got all in a fit when Pilate said, Jesus, King of the Jews. And they said, don't say he was King of the Jews. Say he only claimed to be king. I mean, they were really sticky on that point, that Jesus was, like, not a Messiah at all. He was an imposter.
Well, and to, I find it interesting that Paul didn't introduce that. Because when Paul says,
well,
he gives his defense, he goes, it's just for the resurrection of the dead. It's
right.
Like, wait a minute, that's,
right.
That's just a little.
I'm glad you noticed that.
Oh, absolutely.
Because their second offense, the second charge they charge him for is that he's introducing a new religion and a new God.
Yeah.
So Paul's getting, I wouldn't say Paul's being sneaky, but he's being very smart.
Yeah.
He's being very careful in what he's saying.
He's a good attorney.
He's a good attorney. Because he's not putting, because to acknowledge that Jesus is the Messiah at this point would kind of put fire on or give them, it would give them that point, in a way, that he's introducing a new God. He doesn't want to go there.
So
he's not lying, but he's not offering any information that would hurt him.
So is that why on verse 14 he said, however, I admit that I worship the God of our fathers?
Yes.
Okay. So he was,
yes,
he was being careful.
He's being careful. And he's saying that he had hope in God just as they do. So he's showing how much
similar
he is to them. And that he believes all the things written in the law and the prophets. Okay. Yeah, you guys got it, huh?
Because they called it a sect.
Mm-hmm.
But he, I don't believe that he thinks it's a sect at all.
No.
It's totally building on the foundations of Judaism. So,
and that's what he's saying. And it's true, right? It's true.
So I'm kind of disagreeing with you that he is avoiding the term Messiah because it introduces.
No, he wasn't avoiding
religion.
The term Messiah. They were.
They were.
They were.
Yes, but he's avoiding it also. He hasn't taken yet so far. Anyway,
yeah,
he
well, he will. He will. In fact,
yes,
later on when he talks to Felix, he will talk about it. But yeah, but right now in this context, right now they levied some specific charges against him, and right now what he's doing is refuting those charges. Okay, so I'm not saying he's avoiding Jesus or denying Jesus. He is just dealing with the charges that they brought against him. This is a courtroom scene, and these are courtroom strategies.
Okay,
so. It's like, you know, Matlock or, you know.
Matlock?
I don't know. You know, it's like, you know, the tension of the courtroom, you know. Perry Mason.
Huh?
Perry Mason. There you go. Perry Mason. Yeah, there you go.
Like,
yeah, and Perry Mason's even older, though. It's like, kid, who are these guys? Way before your time. Probably
isn't
before your mom's
time,
too.
I've got older brothers.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so where were we?
I looked at the word sect.
Yeah.
And it said, it's a small religious group that has broken away from an established church.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that Paul felt like he had broken away from it.
No. They called it a sect. And look at what he says in verse... look what he says. He says, he confesses that he worshiped God according to the way which they call a sect.
Right.
He's not calling it.
Right.
Okay. But he says what they call a sect. So he's not saying it's a sect at all.
I think that the same thing goes on a lot today, frankly. There's a lot of contention between churches and calling each other sects.
Yeah, I mean,
you've broken away from our doctrine.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we call Mormonism a.
Well, that's different.
But you see, they say no, we're Christian, but
no,
they do deny the finished work of Christ on the cross.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and for this, that's a red line. Mm-hmm. But the way they see it, they say, no, we're you know, they do the defense that Paul would, but because they deny the finished work of Christ, I'm sorry. It is what it is. Hopefully they will rejoin. I know there are some sects. I know, for example, there is a group called the Church of Christ that, and I don't know what they believed. I don't know what their thing was, but I did hear that this is a group that had broken away. They became a sect, but the original leader died, and so they came back into the fold. So that's just one example where a group does go away, but then they can come back. And prayerfully, that's what happens with the Mormons, too. You know, so I have, you know, in my school, my classroom, I have mostly Christians because I'm a charter school, and North Coast and Vista is like a huge mega church, and North Coast Oceanside, which is a pretty big church, and we have a couple of kids from Vista, my church. They go there. I think that 90% of the kids are Christian. But I do have, in one of my seventh grade classes, a girl who's Jehovah's Witness, and so I really had to be careful. And I heard this from a boy. They were talking about something, and I was like, why don't you just become a Christian? And she goes, I am a Christian. Oh. And I was like, oh, okay. And this is not having to do with anything or lesson or anything. They were just having a little conversation. And I was like, and I never had to redirect lessons because I knew these things would come up. So, yeah. Anyway, so here we are. So he's stating that he believes all things written in the Law and the Prophets, and this is proof against the crime of introducing a new God. and he states that he had hope in God just as they do, and that there will be a resurrection of the dead, both of the just and unjust. And as a result, he strives to have a conscience without offense toward God and men. Okay, so far so good. And then he goes on and explains that he returned to Jerusalem after many years to bring alms and offerings to his nation. You know, these are my people. I'm not a sect. And then he goes on to say that this is when some of the Jews from Asia, who were not even here, where are they? They're the ones who should be here. And they found Paul purified in the temple with a mob or tumult. Therefore, and that goes to the third charge, that he's in the temple, he doesn't have a mob with him, he's not creating a scene. Therefore, they had no right to punish him, okay? Because one of their civic privileges was that they could punish anybody who was causing a disturbance in the temple. So that goes to the third charge. So he's effectively countering the charges, and he's saying that if they have an accusation against him, if the Asian Jews have an accusations against them, they should come before Felix and present their evidence. But there's no evidence. They have nothing. and then he next talks about the council when Lysias, the Roman commander, brought him before the Sanhedrin. And he said that he asked those Jews present if there had been any wrongdoing in him while before they had, so he addresses the Jews that are there before Felix. And he says that the only statement that he could think of that they might have objected to was that he cried out concerning the resurrection of the dead and being judged by you this day. And this was the belief that the Pharisees had, one half of the Sanhedrin. So he's basically saying what you guys are arguing or what you're trying to present, or you know, you have no evidence for it at all. So now we come to what Felix decides to do. But before I do that, is there any questions about this means defense? Pura.
Verse 19. I kind of thought it was strange why. I mean, I knew what happened, you know, in Asia, but mm-hmm. if he's defending himself, why would he bring that up? Because then he's almost like telling the council right there in front of him, that they, that there were a group in, of people, of Jews that were against him, and that also had charges against him. So I kind of think that if I'm, I would have just been quiet about that verse 19. Where it says, but what? There are some Jews from the province of Asia who ought to be here before you and bring charges if they have anything against me.
Mm-hmm.
I almost think that he could have fueled the fire.
Yeah, providing too much?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually he's not, because the first charge, they say that he's a plague, a creator of dissension among the Jews throughout the world.
Oh, okay.
You see?
So he really is.
So he has to address that.
Yeah.
He says, well, the only ones who really would have anything would be the Jews in Asia. If they have any, they should be here to say.
And it's kind of like saying you're supposed to have those that are accusing you.
Yeah, because that's
presented,
just...
That's part of the law, right?
Yeah.
Boom.
So if you're not even here, how can you bring this to
you? Exactly.
It's all by rumor, right?
Yeah, but
exactly.
He's really very detailed.
He is.
Because... He's
answering all their point by point.
Yeah.
Okay. So that he leaves nothing unturned. So there's nothing like, well, you didn't address this, so this, you know. He's like addressing everything they're laying against him. Because these are serious charges. These are charges that could lead to death if proved against him. But he effectively knocks it out and saying they had no proof at all. At any point. So thank you for that. Okay. So so now we're going to look at what Felix decides to do with. Now, when verse 22-27. Well, when Felix heard these things, having a more accurate knowledge of the way, he adjourned the proceedings and said, "When Lysias gets the commander comes down, I will make a decision on your case." So he commanded the centurion to keep Paul and to let him have liberty, and told him not to forbid any of his friends to provide for or to visit him. And after some days, when Felix came with his wife, Drusilla, who was Jewish, he sent for Paul and heard him concerning the faith in Christ. Now, as he reasoned about righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come, Felix was afraid and answered, "Go away for now. When I have a convenient time, I will call for you." Meanwhile, he also hoped that money would be given him by Paul and that he might release him. Therefore, he sent for him more often and conversed with him. But after 2 years, Porcius Festus succeeded Felix, and Felix, wanting to do the Jews a favor, left Paul bound. So, what's the result of the trial? Well, he adjourns proceedings. He says, okay, they're closed. And he hasn't made a decision. He says that he'll make a decision when Lysias, the commander, comes to Caesarea. We don't have any documentation. The Bible doesn't say anything more about Lysias. So this was perhaps a stalling tactic. Now, I know that Felix was trying to appease the Jews. These are the Jewish leaders. And he knew that, he needed to, this was a political move, he needed to appease them in some way.
Is this the same guy that was putting Jews against each other?
Yeah, same guy. But now he's coming to the end of his reign over here, and here's the thing, he had just married Drusilla, because he and his wife, Drusilla Coffer-Paul, she was a Jew. In fact, she was not just any Jew. She was a great-granddaughter of Herod the Great. Okay? She comes from...
Was Herod the Great Jewish?
He was actually... he was not... he was half-Jewish, okay? And it's interesting because he was a descendant of Esau.
Wasn't he the one that would go and he would also worship in the temple sometimes?
Herod the Great. But Herod the Great married Miriam, this Jewish princess, okay? And he had kids. He actually was married 3 times and had kids from all 3 wives. But Herod the Great was like, oh my gosh. He strangled 2 of his sons. because he didn't want them to succeed. 3 years before he died, he strangled two of his sons. Strangled them.
Why?
But he still liked his grandkids.
Oh.
One of the sons that he strangled. And
wow.
Right? And then his son that succeeded him, his son that succeeded him was charged with trying to kill him, and then he was executed for trying to kill a king, because Herod was a king. And so his son was put to death, and the rest, when he did die, his land was broken up between two other sons that managed to survive.
So he had
five? He had several sons, but two of them were, he ordered killed. Another one was put to death by the Romans for plotting the death of his own father. It gets worse.
But it's okay for the father to kill the son.
Right?
Because he's the king.
And but his kids, because if kids born from a Jewish mom are Jewish, so his children by his wife Miriam were considered Jews. And so Drusilla was a sister of King Herod Agrippa II that we're going to see in the next chapter. And Drusilla was 19 years old. She was married to this king, Syrian king, who was not a Jew, but in order to marry her, he converted to Judaism. And Drusilla was considered super beautiful. In fact, she was considered more beautiful than her sister Bernice that will be introduced in the next chapter. So she's 19 years old. Felix meets her, and she's married. He meets her. He falls in love with her at 19. He falls in love with her.
Wait, how old is Felix?
Huh?
How old is Felix?
He's an older man. But these things are old.
Yeah, is he old like my mom, or is he old like my grandma?
You know, I don't know, but I know he's older, okay?
Okay.
Because he was already married before.
Okay.
Okay.
He had been divorced?
Well, oh my gosh, his first wife was also named Drusilla, and yeah, so he married two Drusilla, and his first wife was actually a descendant Cleopatra and Mark Anthony. So anyway,
so he falls
in love with Drusilla. He hires a magician named Simon to convince her to leave her husband and marry him. And she does, because her first husband was kind of boring. And
oh my gosh.
She, I'm sorry, this is too much. But but he convinces Drusilla, because she's a little more exciting, and she marries him. So she's all of 19 years old. So then that's why when Felix and Drusilla now come, and Paul comes to talk to both of them about righteousness and self-control and the judgment to come, Felix goes, that's it for now. I'll talk to you later. Okay? I mean, but here's Paul. Here's Paul. Paul. And Paul knows. I mean, everybody knows about this. I mean, it's like the Kardashians of the day, right?
Oh, jeez.
And Paul, but Paul, does Paul, what does he do? He talks about self-control. He talks about righteousness. Paul isn't pulling any punches. Okay. This guy is like, oh my gosh, tone it down, Paul. You're trying to get free. No, he doesn't though. And what's interesting that Felix is afraid. He's convicted, and he has a right to be. He should be. And he sends Paul away, but he calls for him several times over the next 2 years. They have continuing conversations. You know, interesting.
Well,
it reminds
you think
me
that Paul has money with which to
yeah, and he thinks Paul has money.
Makes him think. I mean, Paul's here in prison.
But what's interesting, he still talks with Paul, even though Paul is getting to him. It reminds me not Herod Agrippa, his dad, Herod Antipas, who killed John the Baptist. Herod would listen to Paul. He would go down and he would listen to him, okay? And when his wife Herodias says, I want him dead, he was like, no. I mean, he was afraid to kill him, or one, and he liked to listen to him. He didn't do anything he said, but he liked to listen to him.
Right.
And, you know, and a lot of Christians are like that today. You know, it's like, we listen, you know, a lot of Christians, they will listen to the word, and they get comfort from it, but they don't follow through. You know, and because there's a certain peace about it. There's a certain, you know, I mean, you know, it's truth. It's truth. And so just like Herod did with John the Baptist, Felix is doing with Paul. Even though he's afraid.
Did he want him to bribe him so that he could do something
different? Yeah, so he wanted to bribe also. And
so then he would have reason to be like...
Well, he wanted to bribe, so because that's what he did. Mm-hmm. Remember I told you before that he would pit people against each other, and then he would come and put down the dissension, and then take whatever they had, because now he had a right, because they were being rebellious and disturbing the peace, so he had a right to take. So he did stuff like that. So, yeah.
Wait, does he ever convert?
No.
Oh, my God.
Well, not that it's in the Bible.
Not that we know of. Later on, he leaves Israel, goes back to Rome, he gets in trouble, he gets out of trouble because his older brother, who's a treasurer for the emperor, gets him out of trouble, and you know, so he's kind of, you know, just in and out of trouble. His older brother's always rescuing him. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's no evidence that he did or didn't, so I can't say that. Just based on the trouble he got into later on, I'm assuming he didn't, but you never know. So, okay, so that was chapter 24. Any questions on that?
Don't you think he wanted, I kind of think that he wanted a bribe so that he could release him?
Yeah, I think, then,
And then that would be, and I actually think he didn't want to keep him in prison, but he figured it was safer for Paul to be in prison.
Yeah.
From the accusing Jews.
But he also wanted the Jews to give the Jews a favor.
Yes.
I mean, he also wanted that.
And so he did marry into the power elite of Judea. He married, you know, Drusilla. Yeah. She's the sister of Herod Agrippa II. So he's married into, you know, to the elite. So there's a certain amount of trying to keep the peace because now it's part of his family.
Sounds like he's trying to cover his bases.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why I said something about I felt like he wanted to release Paul because of the talks that he had.
The talks he had.
Yeah, so he was convicted. He almost felt like the right thing to do is this.
Right.
But,
well,
you know, there's a big group of Jews.
And then he also let him
get cared for by his family.
Yeah. So he exactly. He let him be cared for by and then visited and. You know, so Paul's basically house arrest at this point, which, you know, it's not too bad.
Okay, so the last one is to observe why Felix procrastinates.
Why Felix delay in rendering judgment on Paul. So and that's what we just talked about. So he wanted a bribe. Over the next 2 years, he listened to him. He was afraid of so that's our observation. That Paul talked to him about self-control and righteousness and the judgment to come, and he wanted a bribe too, but he allowed Paul to have visitors and to have them take care of his needs. Mm-hmm. So it was basically a house arrest. You know, he was given liberties. His friends were allowed to visit and provide for him. So, yeah. So that was that for 2 years, though. You know, that's a long time for him to be in one place. You know? So. Okay, chapter 25. I'll try not to get it too much in the, you know, the gossip. Because there's a lot in chapter 25. And some of it's just plain gross, so I'll try not to do that.
Especially
have our interest.
Well, you know, it's you know, how far do you go? You know, it's like. To consider. Circumstances in which Paul appealed to Caesar, in which Paul appealed, is that double L or one L? One. Two.
Had it been prophesied that he was going to get to Caesar?
Yeah, that's what the Lord told him.
Do you remember where?
I think it's chapter 23, chapter 22, or chapter 22. The Lord appeared to him. Tell me, is it 22 or 23? To observe.
As you have testified about me in Jerusalem,
uh-huh.
So you must also testify in Rome.
Yeah. And what chapter is that?
It's 23, verse 11.
Okay, 23. Yeah, I love that verse. For King Agrippa. And this is the second. This is the last descendant of Herod to rule. There are eight altogether. Okay. All right.
Even after he killed his three sons?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
After he had two other sons that survived, and they split the kingdom between them. And that's why, actually, there are some political problems. There was a revolt, and Agrippa the First didn't do well in putting it down. In fact, the Romans had to come and save him. So they took part of his kingdom away, and they gave him just the part in like the eastern half of Israel today, and that's why he's called Herod the Tetrarch, which is like he occupied a total of only a 1/4 of the territory that his father Herod the Great had occupied, because he was such a bad administrator.
That's a small area. Israel is already so small, so
yeah.
To have 1/4 of Israel is like...
Yeah, it's like, I heard that's like the area of San Diego County.
Yeah.
So, never been there, so, can't tell you. You're a blast. All right, so chapter 25. Okay, Paul appears to Caesar. Now, when Festus had come to the province, after 3 days, he went up from Caesarea to Jerusalem. Then the high priest and the chief men of the Jews informed him against Paul, and they petitioned him, asking a favor against him, that he would summon him to Jerusalem, while they lay in ambush along the road to kill him. But Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea, and that he himself was going there shortly. Therefore, he said, let those who have authority among you go down with me and accuse this man to see if there's any fault in him. And when he had remained among them no more than 10 days, he went down to Caesarea, and the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, he commanded Paul to be brought. When he had come, the Jews who had come down from Jerusalem stood about and laid many serious complaints against Paul, which they could not prove, and probably very much the ones that Tertullus had laid against him. While he answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews, nor against the temple, nor against Caesar have I offended in anything at all. And so, yeah, so these, you know, Tertullus had railed very specific charges against him, that he violated Roman law and that he violated Jewish temple law. But Festus, wanting to do the Jews a favor, answered Paul and said, are you willing to go up to Jerusalem and there be judged before me concerning these things? So Paul said, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat where I ought to be judged. To the Jews I have done no wrong, as you know very well. For if I am offender or have committed anything deserving death, I do not object to dying. But if there is nothing in these things of which these men accuse me, no one can deliver me to them. I appeal to Caesar. And then Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered, well, you have appealed to Caesar? To Caesar you shall go. So here we have the Jews are petitioning Festus to return Paul to Jerusalem. And they're most likely very much the very same charges. Because the way he replies is, I haven't done anything against the Roman law, I haven't done anything against the Jewish temple law. So they're just continuing the charges against him. And this time it's the chief priests and chief men who inform Festus of Paul, and they ask for a favor. It's interesting because they ask for a favor, and Festus wants to do them a favor. But he has to observe Roman law, because Paul is a Roman citizen. So he invites the Jews to come to Caesarea with him, and they could accuse Paul there. So apparently, Festus must have learned probably Lysias is still commander there, perhaps after 2 years, and he could have filled him in that he took him to Caesarea in the first place because he found out about that plot to kill him. And, you know, those 40 men who say, we will neither eat nor drink until we have killed him. You know,
I was thinking about them just now. Whatever happened to them?
They're probably still very hungry. No, I don't know. I don't know. But you know, that is the level of hatred they have against him at this point, because it's like they're still wanting to do an ambush, basically. So I'm certain Festus, who's a very politically astute animal, knows what's going on and has some backstory on this, either through Lysias or just reading the file, because the Romans kept good files. I mean, they're very much like officials today. So now what's interesting is that when he does get to Caesarea, so who's Festus? So he comes, this is about AD 59, AD 60. This is a very tumultuous time. The Jews are going to have their huge revolt in AD 66, and it's going to last for, you know, ends in 73 with Masada and the temple being destroyed in 70. So this is what, 66? Let me do my math. 7 years. So it's a 7-year revolt. It's going to happen in a few years. So at this point, the Jews are on edge. And Felix is part of the blame for that, like I told you, the way he ruled. So the Jews are on edge. Festus comes into the situation, and he's got a couple problems. Number one is the Jews are clamoring for expanded civic privileges. They already have a couple. They don't have to do emperor worship. They get to, you know, the temple. They have complete jurisdiction for the temple, as we saw. But they want more. In fact, what they really want is to kick the Romans out, ultimately. But in that, they're pushing for more civic privileges very hard, and with the ultimate goal of just pushing the Romans out. So he has that. He's got that pressure. And then he's also dealing with King Agrippa II, that we're going to be introduced here, got into a really funky dispute with the priests. He had built a new wing on his palace, and it would overlook the temple. Well, the priests, in response, they put up a wall that blocked the view of his new palace. Okay. And they had this fight. Hey, you're blocking my view. I can't see the beach. I have a friend who has a house in Carlsbad, and he asked me, hey, Dave, I need some advice. I want to put a second story in my house. It's a real small house. But I'm going to block the view of the people behind me. What do you think? These are real issues. They're historical, because Agrippa and the priest, they had this really hot, they were ruining his view. So that's Festus. So he's trying to do is bring things down, and we're going to see how he tries to do that, okay? Just bring the temperature of the room down. So shortly after Festus arrives, he goes to Jerusalem. He's introduced to the big man, you know, this is how I'm the new guy. I'm the new, how are you doing, high priest? And that's when they inform him, hey, you know what? You got this guy, Paul, we want him. And we want a favor, bring him back to Jerusalem. And he says, well, you know, hold on here. I'm going back over to Caesarea, and you can come with me, and you can accuse Paul there. So after being in Jerusalem for 10 days, being introduced, you know, the formalities, I'm here, you know, established relationships, he goes back to Caesarea. And so he calls Paul the next day. So this speaks to the immediacy,
the urgency.
Thank you so much.
It was the emotions that gave
yeah.
it to me.
Sounds like.
Yeah, sounds like. Right. So the urgency of the situation. This is very, and remember, this is the wedding, the honeymoon, you know, between the new leader and the people, you know, the top leaders in the land. So, you know, he wants to establish good relationships. And so he actually asks Paul, so he calls Paul before the judgment seat the next day. And the Jews lay their complaints. We've already heard the complaints. And they can't prove them again. And so Paul says, neither against the law of the Jews, nor against the temple, nor against Caesar have I offended in anything at all. And so here, check this out. So Festus, wanting to do the Jews a favor, asked Paul if he wants to go to Jerusalem and have this trial there. And this is a complete death sentence for Paul, because really what Festus is asking Paul, Do you want to go under jurisdiction for this? Because this is where the Jews would be able to pressure Festus. And Paul says, no, because I'm under the jurisdiction of Caesar. I am a Roman citizen. And so Paul states that he stood at Caesar's judgment seat, not Jerusalem's judgment seat, what he knows is a death sentence. In fact, he probably didn't get to Jerusalem because they had an ambush ready for him.
So this shows that Paul didn't want to die. Because I felt like it made it seem like he did when they were, all his brothers and sisters were telling him, don't go. It kind of felt like he wanted to go.
He wanted to go. And he'd be willing to die. Yeah. He didn't want to die, but he'd be willing to die. There's a big difference between having a death wish and doing what you feel God is calling you to do, you know, regardless of the circumstances or the consequences. Okay, so there's a huge difference. So he's not afraid to die, provided that he is doing the will of God and doing the work of God. And if death comes to him because of that,
but he doesn't want to die.
But And because he knows that God had already promised them, and he's going to Rome. So he knows that he cannot agree to this, to go to Jerusalem. Because that's not God's will for him, to go back there, to certain death.
You know, it's, I don't totally understand, like, when chapter 25 started, why did the Jews bring this up to Festus? I guess maybe because he's the new elect, mm-hmm. governor-elect, so they figured they can talk him into it or something can happen.
Exactly. So he goes to introduce himself to them.
Oh, okay.
You know, like, you know, when somebody's elected and then they go to Washington and they make the rounds, they, you know, mm-hmm. and like, hey, I'm the new guy, you know. And this is exactly what he's doing.
Okay, so they're requesting Festus, you know, do his favor, you know, bring back Paul. But I don't get why they had to tell him that they were going to ambush him.
No, they didn't tell him.
Oh, they didn't?
No, this is kind of a side, because they were planning to ambush, you know.
Oh, they were just
the nephew, right? It wasn't the nephew that found out that he was going to...
The first time, the first ambush, a nephew found out. But here, they didn't tell him, we're planning to ambush him.
Like, I guess what is it? Can I read this to you then?
Let's read it together. Right, see,
verse 3.
Read your verse.
So,
I mean, your translation.
Yeah, NIV. They urgently requested Festus, as a favor to them, to have Paul transferred to Jerusalem, for they were preparing an ambush mm-hmm. to kill him along the way. Is that yeah. just like telling us the readers?
Yeah, telling us the readers.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Pretend like
that's
there's
Luke
parentheses
telling us.
Around the for they mm-hmm. were preparing an
yeah.
ambush.
Yeah.
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 That was my question. Luke is still writing?
Luke is still writing. This is Luke. And I don't know if he's with him at this point. He did have friends with him. So there's no indication, like, we would know when Luke was with Paul, because he would say, we went here, and then, so, and there's really no opportunity in the stories he's sharing it. He might have been with him, and I think he was, because there's a lot of detail, for example, the letter that Lysias writes to Felix, in which he says, hey, this is Paul, I saved him. It's very specific, so I'm assuming that Luke had a copy of it, and that perhaps he was actually read it, or it was read to him. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming he's here with Paul, because Paul did have his friends with him those 2 years. But there's no proof that I could say, yeah, he totally was there. But I think he was. And the story is very detailed. Yeah. I mean, we have the letter, you know, it's very detailed. It's very detail rich. So it's a lot better with an eyewitness. So Festus asks Paul if he wants to go to Jerusalem. And this is where Paul, he pulls his trump card. He says, hey, you know what? I stand at Caesar's judgment seat, and that's where I ought to be judged. And he said that he had done no wrong to the Jews, as you, Festus, know very well. And I am willing to die, he says, if I had committed anything worthy of death. But he says, I'm not guilty of the things that the Jews accuse me of, and and I'm not going to be delivered to the Jews, because I'm a Roman citizen, and I appeal to Caesar. And so Festus says, well, that's your right. You appeal to Caesar. To Caesar you shall go. So, very dramatic point here. You know, if there was a movie, you know, and there have been, mostly bad ones, but this would be like a huge, like, dramatic point right here. So any questions on that? So we get some good questions.
So he appealed to Caesar because he didn't want to go to Jerusalem.
Well, going to Jerusalem would be a death sentence, because even without the ambush, that would put him under Jewish jurisdiction. And it would color any decision that Festus would make would be colored by the surrounding, by the pressure. And Caesarea is a more neutral point. That's his seat of power. That's where he has, you know, all his government institutions, you know, over there, where he would be more comfortable. In Jerusalem, it's very tight quarters. The Jewish mob is there. The pressure is great. I mean, even Lysias brought Paul before the Sanhedrin because, you know, the pressure was just very great. He wanted to know what this guy did. And then, of course, the ambush. So going to Jerusalem would signal his death, and he knew that. Because he says that he'd be willing to die if he committed anything. But he was not going to be delivered to the Jews. So he knew going to Jerusalem, he'd be delivered to the Jews. So he knows that's his death sentence. So he's a Roman citizen, and he appeals to Caesar. Now this appeal to Caesar doesn't mean that he goes before Caesar himself. What it means is he's appealing to the highest law of the land as it applies to the charges against him. So, for example, if you think, you know, the Supreme Court, You know, if you're going to take a case to the Supreme Court, you might not ever get to the Supreme Court. You might be one of the levels. There's the district court. There's the appellate court. You know, there are several layers. And only if, you know, under certain circumstances, it actually go to the Supreme Court. So there are levels that you go to, but so when he says he appeals to Caesar, he probably never even saw Caesar. He would just go to the highest authority applicable to the charges against him. Okay. So now we're going to look at a couple of new characters here. And this is where Paul's case is heard by King Agrippa. So we'll start in verse 13. And I'll just finish off the chapter reading it, and then we can just make our comments. So in verse 13. And after some days, King Agrippa and Bernice came to Caesarea to greet Festus. So again, this meet and greet, because Festus is new. Pardon?
I said it sounds like a wine and dine.
It is, yeah, a wine and dine. There you go. That's exactly what it is. So they come to greet Festus, and when they had been there many days, Festus laid Paul's case before the king, saying, "There's a certain man left a prisoner by Felix, about whom the chief priests and the elders of the Jews informed me. When I was in Jerusalem, they asked for a judgment against him. And to them I answered, it's not the custom of the Romans to deliver any man to destruction before the accused meets the accusers face to face and had an opportunity to answer for himself concerning the charge against him. Therefore, when they had come together without any delay, the next day I sat on the judgment seat and commanded the men to be brought in. When the accuser stood up, they brought no accusation against him of such things as I supposed, but had some questions against him about their own religion and about a certain Jesus who had died, who Paul affirmed had been allowed to be alive. And because I was uncertain of such questions, I asked whether he was willing to go to Jerusalem and be there and there be judged concerning these matters. But when Paul appeared to be reserved for decision of Augustus, I commanded him to be kept till I could send him to Caesar. Then Agrippa said to Festus, I also would like to hear the man myself. Tomorrow, he said, you shall hear him. So the next day, when Agrippa and Bernice had come with great pomp and had entered the auditorium with the commanders and the prominent men of the city, at Festus' command, Paul was brought in. And Festus said, King Agrippa and all the men who are here present with us, you see this man about whom the whole assembly of the Jews petitioned me, both at Jerusalem and here, crying out that he was not fit to live any longer. But when I found he had committed nothing deserving of death, and that he himself had appealed to Augustus, I decided to send him. I have nothing certain to write to my lord concerning him, therefore I have brought him out before you, and especially before you, King Agrippa, so that after the examination has taken place, I may have something to write. For it seems to me unreasonable to send a prisoner and not to specify the charges against him. So, King Agrippa, great-grandson of Herod the Great. And Herod the Great, we saw him at the birth of Jesus, and then we saw his son, Antipas, who was the tetrarch, who killed John the Baptist, and actually even saw Jesus when Pilate had nothing against Jesus. He sent him to Herod because we found that the Jesus was from Galilee, and that's where Herod ruled. Then Herod happened to be in Jerusalem for the festival. He sent him to Herod, and Herod was really excited because he wanted to meet Jesus because he'd heard about him and he wanted to see a miracle. And then Jesus did not do a miracle. Not only that, but Jesus didn't even say a word to Herod. And so Herod was like super disappointed because he was like, oh my gosh, I want to see a miracle, man. And basically Jesus is not going to talk to this guy. So he wraps Jesus in a royal robe, and he mocks him, and he sends him back to Pilate. And then they were friends after that, because before they were enemies. So that was Herod Antipas, who actually survived his dad, okay, which was like a big deal. You know, which reminds us, when Jesus was born and when he escaped, you know, it says that Herod was greatly disturbed and all of Jerusalem with him, because when Herod was disturbed, people died. So it was no wonder that all of Jerusalem was disturbed also. So, what a guy. And so, Herod Agrippa the First was the grandson of Herod, and he's the guy who killed James, and he's the guy who died by having worms eaten him. Okay? That was the grandson, Herod Agrippa the First, you know, who gave this awesome speech at Caesarea when it was still controlled by the Herods, and he was wearing that silver robe that shone like the sun. Everybody said, "You're like a god." And he was like, "Yeah." And then he died. So that was Herod Agrippa the First. Now, his son is this guy, Herod Agrippa the Second. And he was actually overthrown in 66 AD with the Jewish revolt, which is going to happen now in about 6 years. And he actually supports the Romans in the Jewish revolt. And he actually goes and moves to Rome, and he lives a long life over there. Never marries, though. So just kind of a...
Wait, then who's Bernice?
His sister.
Oh.
So is Drusilla. The girl that married Felix was the younger sister. And Bernice abused her because Drusilla was more beautiful than she was. And Bernice was also beautiful. And in fact, later on, Bernice is going to have a love affair with Titus, who is a future emperor. So Bernice is a very powerful woman. She's very rich and very powerful. And and she lived with her brother. So
also says, didn't it say she had a little... thingy with a
problem.
Yeah. That's what it says in mine too,
right? Yeah. I wasn't gonna get into that, but you guys
that's what you meant.
That's true.
That's maybe
right.
Well, no, in fact she actually married a king because of the rumors and just the innuendos, and so she married a certain king. And then she went back with her brother.
Wait, how do you know all this?
It's
in the footnotes right now.
Wikipedia.
Are you serious?
I love Wikipedia. Are you kidding?
Really?
Yeah. You know, and people say, well, you know, it's not true. You know, they have the footnotes too.
Yeah, mine right there.
Yeah,
but like.
No, Wikipedia is great. I love it. I tell my kids.
How did you know that Bernice abused her sister?
Wikipedia.
Oh my gosh.
It's all right there. Just Google it.
Okay.
No, hey. If you, in the bottom of the Wikipedia page, it has all the footnotes. So you can go to the actual text.
Wow.
So even though, you know, Wikipedia, I mean, the thing is, you can change it, and that they'll have the guys there who will fix it. And then they have the actual footnotes with the actual historical documents that you can check on. So actually, Wikipedia is really good. And in fact, in community colleges, they're allowing me now to use it.
As a source. Really?
Now, mm-hmm. There are several teachers who do that. They'll allow you. So where was I? Oh, okay. So King Agrippa, and this is the King Agrippa that I told you about, who had built a new wing to his palace, and he had a dispute with the priest because they built this wall to block his view. It just seems so petty. Yeah, it's like just like bad neighbors. So what happens now is that Festus lays Paul's case before Agrippa, and he notes that Felix had left Paul a prisoner, And the chief priests and elders of the Jews informed Festus about Paul. And he told the Jews that it was not the Roman custom. And again, Roman citizenship rights are very powerful. It's not the Roman custom to deliver the accused for destruction without the accused having the opportunity to answer the charges. And that's one of the Roman citizenship rights. So Festus has Paul come before the judgment seat. And Festus, again, just like with Felix, there's nothing wrong. There's no proof. And he says, other than some question about their own religion and about a certain Jesus who died, Paul affirms to be alive. And then he tells them about the fact that he had actually asked Paul if he wanted to go to Jerusalem because he was uncertain about these matters. And it sounds like Lysias, who brought Paul before the Sanhedrin because he was unsure also. And that almost was the death of Paul right there. But instead, Paul appealed to Caesar. And so Agrippa requested to hear Paul himself. And just like his dad, who wanted to hear Jesus, you know, Agrippa says, I'd like to hear him. And so Festus tells him, tomorrow you should hear him. And here's the thing, there's a certain, you know, curiosity about the gospel that people would like to hear, you know. Yesterday. I have a brother-in-law who had a stroke. And I went to the hospital a few times to see him with my wife. And so we went yesterday after church. And he's not a believer. And I thought he was doing better, but because at the hospital you can still speak, but he's not. He's in a hospital bed in the living room, you know. And I was kind of fearful about sharing with him. I don't know why, but it's just like, well, you know, Lord, I'll just let you direct. If the opportunity is there, I'll go through with it, but I'm going to let you. So we sat there, and I asked him, can I pray for you? And he goes, in fact, not even wait for a response. Like, I want to pray for you. Okay, so I prayed for him. And when I opened my eyes, he was just looking straight at me. So I don't think he ever closed his eyes. I think he was just looking at me the whole time.
You probably can't. Sometimes it depends on how effective it is.
But he was just looking at me, and he started crying. And I think the stroke affected his emotions. Does it do that?
Sometimes.
Because he started crying, and I was like, huh. And so we left. So.
I think it's the perfect opportunity to go over there and just read.
Pardon?
Just go and read.
You know, and I thought of doing that. Especially when he was at the hospital, I wanted to do that. I was like, you know, maybe just go read the psalm to him. But every time there was not an opportunity, you know, his wife is like very chatty and talkative. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I did pray for him every time I went to the hospital, and I prayed for him here. But it's like, you know, they're not believers, you know, and so, you know, I felt that's what I was able to do. I think people, you know, people are like, even non-believers are willing to say, hey, can I pray for you?
Mm-hmm. They'll tell you if they don't want you to.
Yeah, they will.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
They will tell you if they don't want you to.
Yeah.
Because I've had that happen.
Oh, okay.
Times,
so. Yeah. You know, that's fine too.
Yeah.
So, but every time I've done that, people are open. Yeah. I have a brother, who's not a believer, you know, but he's open to spiritual things, you know. I mean, so he loves prayer, but you know, for him, prayer is like, you know, kind of the spiritual feel goody, and I think that's what people appeal to, so they're drawn to hearing the gospel. I pray for him. His name is Aurelio, But Agrippa is like, yeah, I'd like to hear him. And he goes, tomorrow you will. So there is Paul. He's standing before kings and queens and rulers, just like the Lord said he would. And he's doing it. And so Paul is brought before King Agrippa, and there's a lot of pomp. And Agrippa and Bernice, these aren't just regional commanders. Bernice it almost becomes empress of the whole Roman Empire. Unfortunately, Titus died too soon before she becomes his empress, because they just had an affair, but he was in love with her. And Agrippa was good friends with the emperor. So these are very powerful people. Festus explained the situation to Agrippa, and the men gathered. And Festus reports that the Jews claimed Paul was not fit to live any longer. And Festus states that he found that Paul had committed nothing deserving death. And he just noted that Paul appeared to Caesar and he was going to send him. And here's the reason why Festus presents Paul before Agrippa. He says, I hope that after examining Paul that you can, that I can have something to write about. For it's unreasonable to send an appeal to Caesar without specifying the charges. So here's Paul, and this is kind of a unique situation because Paul's appealing to Caesar, but there's no real charge against him. And this just speaks to the power of the political power that the Jews have at this point, that even the governors are afraid to let Paul go. And I've mentioned it already, but we have to understand the situation, the political situation at this juncture in Jewish history is very poisonous. The Jews are just and about in a state of rebellion, and any wrong step by the governor is going to set them off. And eventually it does. And Festus is sent there to try to calm things down. And so he's automatically presented with this dilemma. And he doesn't want to antagonize the Jews, especially coming right in. And that's why he asked Paul, are you willing? Even though Paul's a Roman citizen, are you willing to go to Jerusalem? And that would save Festus a lot of trouble right there, Paul had, but Paul did not. He's not making it easy for Festus. So this is a very difficult, and any misstep by Paul would spell his death. So this is very interesting because I can just imagine Paul's prayer life at this point. Just asking the Lord for guidance because, it was just a very difficult situation for Paul. So, but as we can see, God is going to have him under his protection. Any other questions or comments? Yeah?
This is random, but after the rebellion, are the Jews dispersed?
No, actually, after the rebellion is put down, the Roman rule becomes even stricter, but the Jews are still there. And they actually have two more rebellions, and the last one is in AD 132, where the Romans just finally had it, and all Jews are removed at that point.
Well,
they're just removed.
Where do they are removed to?
They're not allowed to live in Jerusalem anymore.
They have to go everywhere else.
They're dispersed.
Dispersed.
They have to go. You're not allowed to be here anymore. You guys are too rebellious.
And then are they dispersed all the way until they come back in 1948?
Actually, it starts in the late 1800s, the Zionist movement, actually.
Oh, yeah.
With a guy named Herzl, and he actually had a great vision of the Jews coming back to... and what they did, they would buy up the property. Because at this time, Israel was just a ramshackle place, mostly wilderness. It wasn't governed or ruled effectively, but the Ottoman Empire controlled it. And it was just a wasteland. And they were buying up property left and right and returning. So, and it really started to, after World War I, when the British defeated the Ottoman Empire, they got the British mandate where they controlled now. And the Balfour Declaration. Balfour was a British diplomat, and the Balfour Declaration said that the Jews had a right of return, and that just gave the green light for after, I think, 1922, Jews to start pouring into Israel.
Yeah. So I remember that there was a time when, I think it might have been that guy you brought up with the vision.
The Herzl?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But Jews were scared to go in because it was so dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the guy during that time?
Well, they were buying a property and they were meeting resistance when the Arab Muslims in the area realized what the Jews were doing. And especially after the Balfour Declaration, there was a virtual civil war between the Jews and the Arabs.
Oh, yeah.
So all the way up until, you know,
now.
1948. Well, now they love each other. Oh, wait, that's another place I'll get. Wrong story. In fact, the Jews had, you know, their own terrorist groups were pretty savage. I mean,
against the Jews?
Against the British.
Oh, the Jewish people against
the British, because the British after the Jews. I'm sorry, guys, but this is actually super fascinating for me. After the Jews and the Arabs started fighting against each other, the British who were there, you know, trying to, this British mandate trying to maintain peace, they started limiting Jewish immigration because it was becoming too problematic.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Romans here, a little bit. You know, just becoming too problematic. So the Jews started doing terrorist acts against the British.
Oh.
So, and against the Arabs. And
then what happened?
Well, World War II started.
Oh.
So, and then the Holocaust. And after the Holocaust, they just came forward and worried. And they still try to limit them. In fact, there's a great movie called The Exodus with Paul Newman, which is all about that. You should see that movie.
What?
Exodus. It's after World War II, and the Jews are trying to, from the Holocaust, are coming back in, and the British are trying to limit them and stop them. and the Jewish Irgun, the Jewish terrorist organization, they're bombing the British soldiers, you know, and the fighting with that. And in fact, even Jews fighting it, because there are different Jewish groups, the moderates and then the radicals. So
was Israel a safe space during World War II?
The Arabs, many Arabs actually sided with Hitler.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's just because the Ottoman Empire sided with Germany in World I. So, because they were against the British, who they felt were pro-Jewish, you know, because between the wars, the Balfour Declaration, saying that Jews had a right to return. So they felt that, you know, the British were for the Jews, so we're going to go for the Germans, you know, because they'll protect our rights. So
was the Ottoman...
Okay.
Was the Ottoman mostly Arab? Muslims?
No, the Ottomans were Turk. They were Turk. They're a completely different people. They're now modern-day Turkey. They're Muslim, but they're a different race. So
so then how did the Arabs get there?
They've always been there. They're the descendants of...
Ishmael.
They've always been there.
First son,
yeah.
By, yeah.
Hagar.
And they've always, you know, you know, Ishmael was a donkey of a man. He would always be in contention with his brothers. Get up.
So all the way since then,
mm-hmm.
they've been there?
Mm-hmm.
So you can see why they think that they have a right to that.
Yeah.
They don't acknowledge that God,
mm-hmm.
well, the Almighty God, gave to the Jews, then
You know, the Muslims have been there. It should be theirs.
Well, the Arabs have been there. I mean, they didn't become Muslim until much later.
Yeah.
But the Arab as a people have been there a long time.
Yeah.
In fact, yeah. All right. So any other questions about our study? Love your questions. There's some good movies, and there's a great documentary series. I forget the name of it. But it's about the birth of Israel, the nation Israel. Super fascinating. Oh my gosh. The God of Ham.
Was it a PBS? Which documentary are you thinking of?
I can't remember. I mean, we actually had it at a church in a church library back when we had VHS tapes. Okay? It was several VHS tapes. Yeah, they were great. You pop them in the machine and
I remember.
Okay. and I would just watch them. It was like super fascinating. It must have been a PBS documentary because it was very detailed. But oh my gosh, just because in 1948 when they declared their independence on May 5th, I mean the next day, Syria, Jordan, Egypt attacked them.
Yes.
Overwhelming odds. And it was, I mean, the Air Force, and overwhelming, and the manner in which they were able to survive and to defeat this coalition against them, it's only God.
Yes. The story. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, modern-day miracles. I mean, if you cannot look at the modern history of Israel and say that God is still not working,
you're crazy.
For the Jews. He has a purpose for them and a plan for them.
And they're the only people group ever who has left and come back.
Survived.
And the language.
As an intact people group, yes.
Yeah.
Culture.
Only people.
And the language.
Okay. All right, guys. So, yeah. But they can be stinkers, okay?
Oh, yeah.
They can be stinkers still.
Yeah.
So.
They are a stubborn group.
But they're God's people. And I guess God, you know, I guess God just designed them that way because they need to be.
Yeah.
To survive.
To survive. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. One of my favorite musicals is Fiddler on the Roof. Mm-hmm. It's great. Nobody's ever seen it?
No, you've definitely seen it. It's great.
It's right there on Perry Mason.
Yeah. Fiddler on the Roof, you should see it. It's a musical. Love it. Yeah, but it's all about, you know, tradition versus, you know, just new things. But let's go ahead and pray, and then you guys can answer your objectives. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for our class and just everyone who's here, Lord, on this Thanksgiving holiday thingy. So I just ask that you just bless everyone here, and thank you for a great class. I love the input, Lord, and just love the discussion that we had. And it was edifying to me, and it got me to thinking too, Lord. So Lord, thank you for this opportunity to serve you in this way, and I just pray that you would just bless everyone that was here tonight, Lord. Thank you for your such a good God. I pray that in Jesus' name. Mm-hmm. Amen.
How do you spell Herzl?
Let me Google it.
I'm going to start attendance.
Okay.
Oh, there's one already.
If you think of the documentary,
let me know. Okay, I will definitely, because it's a great documentary.
Yeah.
And if you guys can sign in. It's not like pro, you know, religion. It's just the facts.
Yeah.
So you interpret, oh, that's totally the Lord, because as they go through the history and what happened, it's just, you know, it's just the history. They're not promoting a religious, you know, perspective on that. But you just see it and you're like, oh my gosh, that's so the Lord. So it's so super fascinating. And even just the people going through it, you know, and what they did and what they were willing to do through overwhelming odds, through as they're going into battle, they're just like, there's no way they're going to win. There's no way. And they just do it. and they win, and it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And see that, and you see them excited because they did what they didn't think they could do, and they're like, is that crazy?
I've heard stories about, like, there was this one where it was this town or city in Israel, and it was on May 5th, I think, and, like, Syria and Egypt, everyone was coming against them, and so they built this, it looked like a army, those things, those big tractor things, and they built it out of cardboard and paint. Have you heard this story?
No.
Okay, just some of the stories. They built it out of, like, cardboard and paint, and somehow they defeated the Syrians. Some of the stories are just, like, out of cardboard, and they won? I just can't.
Yeah, I heard stories, like, one tank against 50,
yes.
And every shot hit it, you know, and just no way they should have won, and they just... knocked out 50 tanks with just one.
Can you believe that? And then there's those other stories where it's like the army just all of a sudden started retreating. And then they're like, why did you retreat? Oh, well, we saw those guys with flaming swords. Or those, like they described the angels. And you're like, oh my gosh. But they weren't even there.
Love it. Thank you, Gwen.
Thank you.
Thank you,
John.
You